Chapter 23. The Dark Angels of Zahariel's squad gathered around the assault ramp of the Stormbird to listen to Sahadariel's final mission briefing before taking the fight to the surface of Sarosh. The Stormbirds gathered on the portside embarkation deck, ready to be unleashed on the planet below, and the assembled warriors were in a killing mood. The Lion would lead this attack personally, and though Zahariel was still in great pain from the attack on the Invincible Reason, his training in the Librarius had selected him for this mission despite his injuries. Nemiel had been chosen to accompany the Lion's squads, and even in the urgent fervour that gripped every warrior before battle, Zahariel was stung by his cousin's inclusion in the group. Luther was not present, and Zahariel had been surprised by his absence, but had left the matter unremarked, seeing the Lion's hooded expression when Sahadariel had mentioned their second in command. "This smacks of great danger," said Atias, and Zahariel was glad to hear the familiar voice of his friend. Atias had made a fine member of the Astartes and was a valued and trusted battle brother. "We always face danger," said Eliath, quoting some of the Legion's teachings. Like Atias, Eliath had come through the training of the Astartes with honour and was one of the Legion's best heavy weapon troopers. "We are Astartes. We are Dark Angels. We were not made to die of old age. Death or glory. Loyalty and honour." "Loyalty and honour," echoed Atias. "Understand, I'm not questioning the need for danger. I merely ask whether we should base our strategy in this theatre on the workings of an experimental device. If the bomb doesn't work, what then? I'd hate to face an enemy with Eliath's good looks as our only fallback weapon if it proves to be a damp squib." There was momentary laughter among the assembled warriors, even from Eliath, whose squat, hard-worn features and heavy-set build were the source of some occasional fun at his expense. "Better my good looks than your swordsmanship," responded Eliath, "unless you hope the enemy will be driven to distraction by the whistling sound your blade makes as it misses them over and over again." "We are Dark Angels," said Hadariel, and the laughter stopped. "We are the First Legion, the warriors of the Emperor. You ask whether we should trust ourselves to the science of the Mechanicum and the wisdom of our brother Librarian. I ask you, how can we not? Is not science the Imperium's guiding light? Is it not our bedrock? Is it not the stone on which the foundations of our new society have been built? So yes, we will trust their science. We will trust our lives to it, just as we trust ourselves and all humanity to the guidance of the Emperor, beloved of all." "I am sorry, Chapter Master," said Atias, chastened. "I meant no offence."
"You caused none," said Hadariel. "You simply asked a question, and there is no harm in that. If ever a time comes when the Dark Angels see reason to avoid questions, we will have lost our souls."
Zahariel looked across the faces of the men surrounding him as he listened to the Chapter Master's words. Some were men he had known back on Caliban, and the bond that existed between them as brothers and fellow warriors was as strong as Ceramite. Stronger, in fact, for where Ceramite could be cut through with the right kind of weapon, he could never imagine the bond of loyalty he felt for his brother Astartes ever being broken. "The Chapter Master is right," said Zahariel, as words he had heard long ago returned to resonate within his skull. "We Astartes were made to serve mankind. We are Dark Angels, and in the practice of war we follow the teachings of the Lion. He tells us war is a matter of adaptation, and whoever adapts most quickly to changing circumstances and takes advantages of the vagaries of warfare will be victorious. We have been presented with a powerful weapon with which to defeat our foe, and we would be fools not to use it."
"So we will make use of the device," said Eliath. "I hope you'll forgive my presumption, Chapter Master, but I have known you for long enough to know when there is a plan forming in your head. The device is only part of what we need. We also need a plan to help us put it into operation. Do you have a plan?"
"I have a plan," agreed Hadariel.
Zahariel looked into the faces of his brothers and saw an expression of complete determination in each of them as Sahadariel outlined their plan of attack. The Saroshi were doomed. They just didn't know it yet. It was midday, and the burning sun had reached its apex. Among the indigenous folk of Sarosh, it was seen as a quiet time, a part of the day usually spent sleeping in the shade of their dwellings until the worst of the afternoon heat had passed. The planet's newly arrived Imperial forces did not choose to follow the same routines, however, least of all the warriors of the Astartes. Four stormbirds screamed over the desert, keeping low and fast as they flew towards their objective, a cluster of prefabricated buildings identified from orbit as Mining Station 1 Zeta 5. In the lead stormbird, Zahariel sat against the bucking fuselage of the aircraft as it tore through the air towards battle. All around him, Dark Angels sat clutching their weapons, ready to take a measure of revenge for the attack on their ships and people. The Soroshi had started this war, but the Dark Angels were going to finish it.
"This is the Lion, to all assigned units," said their leader's voice over the vox, and despite the growing aloofness the Legion's master had been displaying recently, Zahariel was still struck by the commanding tone of his voice. "Mission target is confirmed as Mining Station 1 Zeta 5. Initiate all mission protocols."
Zahariel heard a flurry of vox traffic as the relevant units responded in the affirmative. The Stormbirds were heavily armoured assault shuttles designed to ferry a complement of Astartes warriors into the middle of even the most ferocious of firefights. Each was painted black and marked with a winged sword icon on its hull, in accordance with Legion heraldry.
"We are ready, my lord," said Hadariel, and Zahariel could hear the relish in his chapter master's voice.
It was a relish shared by every man in the Stormbird. Eliath sat across from Zahariel, his broad shoulders and thick-set build making a flight seat a cramp proposition for him. His friend was an impressive physical specimen, even for an Astartes, and he saluted as he sensed Zahariel's scrutiny.
"Not long now," said Eliath.
His friend was not wearing his helmet and had to yell to be heard above the roar of the craft's engines.
"Be good to strike back, eh?"
"Aye, that it will," replied Zahariel.
"How are we going to make the assault, Chapter Master?" asked Atias.
"We will be using jump packs for the descent," said Hadariel. "Our orders are to deploy from the shuttle at an altitude of 500 metres to make a controlled combat drop. We land in the area of open scrub north of the station. From there we will advance to clear the station building by building until we rendezvous with the approach of the Lion and his men from the south. Naturally, we can expect the enemy to respond. In fact, we're counting on it."
Around the compartment, the Astartes listened to his words intently. From his own position, seated at the head of the troop compartment, Zahariel was struck by the almost reverential air with which the men of his company greeted the news.
"Remember, our mission here is to fight through any resistance as quickly as possible and deliver the brother librarian and his cargo," said Hadariel. "Once we have deployed from the Stormbirds, the pilots will ascend to a holding pattern ready to pick us up when they're given the order to begin the extraction. I want helmets on and all purity seals engaged. 1 Zeta 5 is to be treated as a toxic environment."
Zahariel could barely contain his excitement at the prospect of combat. He had been trained to counteract any fear, but as much as the Astartes were defined by fearlessness, they were defined equally by their aptitude for war. Their bodies had been crafted to superhuman levels so that they would not just defeat the Imperium's enemies, they would annihilate them. The Astartes expected to face danger in the natural course of their lives. In fact, they welcomed it, as though without a battle to fight, they were incomplete.
"Finally, let us be clear on one thing," said Hadariel. "This is a mission of destruction, not capture. We are not interested in prisoners, so if there is anyone alive at 1 Zeta 5, we do not stop fighting until they are dead."
His words were punctuated by a trilling from the Stormbird's intervox as a red light began to flash inside the compartment. Hadariel responded with a wolfish grin.
"There's the signal," he said. "We are approaching the target. Helmets on and activate your seals. And good hunting to all of you."
Zahariel's heart quickened at the prospect of action. "If we're not fighting within the next 5 minutes, I shall be disappointed," he said to Eliath and Atias. He could feel his senses sharpening as the prospect of the drop came closer. Eliath nodded in response to his words and gave the Dark Angel battle cry.
"For the Lion, for Luther, for Caliban!" "For the Lion, for Luther, for Caliban," repeated the Astartes, and the combined tenor of their words seemed to shake the metal bulkheads of the compartment.
At Hadariel's signal, they rose from their seats and filed towards the assault door at the back of the shuttle, ready for the drop to begin. The Stormbird began to shake around them as the pilot decreased the shuttle's speed in preparation for the drop. The assault doors opened, and the red lights positioned all through the interior of the Stormbird turned green. A continuous ringing tone sounded over the intervox, the signal to jump. Zahariel was first down the ramp, and he felt the air screaming around him, alongside the sudden feeling of weightlessness in the split second before gravity caught hold of him, and he activated his jump pack to compensate. Eliath, Atias, Hadariel and the others were right behind him, exhaust flares spreading from their packs like fiery wings as they descended towards the mining station 500 meters below. He missed Nemiel's presence for a moment, but pushed such thoughts from his mind as he saw the dusty hardpan rushing up towards him. It was time for war, time to let the Dark Angels fly. As the Angels descended, they were not met by anti-aircraft fire from ground-based batteries or entrenched and heavily armed defenders. Their drop was unopposed, and Zahariel was thankful for such small mercies, remembering far worse training drops where live ammunition had been used to make things more interesting. They made their landing in the area of open scrub in good order. Having landed, the Dark Angels fanned out, advancing on the mining station at 1 Zeta 5 in a loose skirmish line, helmets down and weapons at the ready. At first sight, it was as though they had entered a ghost town. The station was eerily quiet, though Zahariel's senses were alert to the growling psychic presence buzzing at the edge of perception. A ridge of high cliffs rose above the station to the west, but otherwise its perimeter was surrounded by open desert on three sides. In the centre of the station, over the mine head, there was the enormous drum of the cable winch, designed to bring the miners up and down to the angled mine shaft that ran at a 45-degree angle into the ground, as well as raising the ore they had mined to the surface. In turn, it was surrounded by a ramshackle collection of prefabricated huts and the barracks used as sleeping quarters for the miners. Wheeled ore bins were dotted throughout the station, some overturned with their cargo spilled out. As Zahariel and his men moved from the outskirts of the settlement towards the admin buildings in the immediate vicinity of a minehead, they found all the intervening huts and barracks empty. 1 Zeta 5 seemed to be deserted. The only sound Zahariel could hear was the terse back and forth of inter-squad vox. Beyond that, the entire area was silent.
"There's something here," he heard Hadariel say. "I can feel it."
"I agree," replied Zahariel. "There should be animal sounds, but all I can hear is silence. There's something here, and it's frightened away the local fauna."
Using the same channel, Zahariel heard Hadariel link comms with the squads on the other side of the station.
"Hadariel to the Lion. Any sign of the enemy?"
"Nothing so far," came the terse reply. "I can see their leavings, though."
There was blood on the sand. In some places, it had hit the ground in small scattered droplets. In others, it took the form of larger puddles, staining the soil and already starting to stink in the midday heat. Here and there, Zahariel could see objects scattered around their advance. Discarded auto weapons, a las torch, a broken comms unit, detonator cord, all left lying in the sand. Zahariel glanced up at the sky, where the stormbirds turned in wide and endlessly repeating circles, thousands of meters above them. Zahariel suddenly became aware of a rising and repulsive odour, like the slaughterhouse smell of rancid blood mixed with the cloying, sickly sweet stench of rotten fruit. He tried to shout a warning, but it was too late. The prefabricated metal of the building nearest to Tyus ruptured as something massively powerful tore through it and leapt to the attack. Zahariel saw a glimpse of scales, vertically pupilled eyes, and a fanged mouth opening wide. The creature spat something in Atias's face, and his helmet erupted in hissing smoke, as though doused with acid. It leapt upon the stricken warrior, its whip-thin arms wrapping around Atias as it tore at him with razor claws that sliced open its victim's power armor like tinfoil. It wrapped its forearms around Atias's torso, and there was a wet, awful sound as dozens of retractable claws hidden along the creature's limbs emerged from inside muscular sheaths and stabbed through the warrior's armor. Atias dropped, his blood staining the sand as the monster leapt away, its strangely jointed legs propelling it over the rough terrain at an incredible speed. Bolter rounds chased it, exploding against the buildings of the mining settlement, but failing to hit their target. Zahariel watched as the beast vanished from sight. There was something wrong in the way it had moved, its knees and ankles flexing at peculiar angles. More gunfire erupted from around the compound, and frantic cries came over the vox as more of the Dark Angel squads came under attack. Choking back a cry of rage, Zahariel rushed to the side of his fallen comrade. Atias's helmet was a smoking ruin, the stench of scorched metal and skin, sickening, even filtered through the auto-senses of Zahariel's armour. Atias writhed in agony, and Zahariel fought to tear his helmet free. The helmet's armour clasps had burned through, and Zahariel had no choice but to wrench the smouldering armour from his friend's head. The helmet came free from the armoured gorget, and Atias screamed as the skin of his face came with it, ropes of flesh drooling like molten rubber from the remains of his helm.
"Get back!"
cried the squad's apothecary, pushing Zahariel from his comrade's convulsing body. The apothecary went to work, the hissing tubes, needles and dispensers of his Narthesium gauntlet the best chance of ensuring Atias's survival. Zahariel stepped away, horrified at the bloody mess where his friend's face used to be. Hadariel pulled him away.
"Leave the apothecary to his ministrations. We have work to do."
Eliath stood next to Zahariel and said,
"By the lion, I've never seen the like."
Zahariel nodded in agreement and slapped his hand on the heavy bolter his friend carried.
"Keep your weapon ready, brother. These things move fast." "What are they?" asked Eliath. "I thought this was a human world."
"That was our mistake," replied Zahariel as more gunfire and vox chatter cut through the shock of Atias's wounding.
"Hostile contact," reported another squad sergeant. "Reptilian beasts. Came out of nowhere. Fast moving, but I think we wounded it. One dead. Moving on."
"Understood," said the lion. "Message understood. All units continue to the centre of the settlement."
The strange reptilian beast attacked twice more, each time emerging from hiding to attack with unnatural speed and ferocity. Each time the monsters attacked, they would draw blood, but no more warriors fell to their ambushes, though many were forced to discard portions of armour as the Xenos creature's acid eructations melted their Mark III plate. The Astartes pushed further into the settlement, bolters chattering as they methodically advanced in an overlapping formation, one squad moving forward as another covered it. The attacks grew more frequent as they drew nearer their objective, and as they gained the inner reaches of the settlement, Zahariel saw that the creatures had gathered in a mass of rippling, scaled bodies before the entrance to the mineshaft. Zahariel felt his gorge rise at the sight of such unnatural beings, their anatomy twisted so far from the human ideal that he could think of no classification of form to assign them. Each limb was multi-jointed and appeared to move and rotate on a number of different axes. Their bodies were sinuous and rippled with iridescent scales that were translucent and somehow ghostly, as though their bodies were not quite real.
"What are they?" asked Eliath. "Unclean Xenos creatures," answered Hadariel.
Gunfire sounded from the three open sides of the settlement, and Zahariel saw the lion emerge from behind a tall structure of rusted sheet metal. Once again, he was struck by his Primarch's physicality as he led the warriors of the Dark Angels from the front, his sword raised and the fury of battle in his eyes. No sooner had Lionel Johnson appeared than the Xenos creatures set up a terrible keening cry, though whether this was in fear or anticipation, Zahariel could not say. They surged forward in a boiling tide of scales and claws, and the Dark Angels charged to meet them. Bolters blazed and exploded wetly inside the creatures. Each wounded creature fell to the sand and began dissolving into a pool of glassy, viscous fluid. The two foes met in a storm of blades and claws. Zahariel was face to face with a screeching creature with an elongated head and rippling coloured eyes with vertical slits. It hissed and bit at him with such speed that its first attack nearly took his head off. He leapt back and fired into the creature's belly, the bolt passing through before detonating. Wounded, the creature slashed at him with its claws and spat a gobbet of acid mucus towards him. He swayed aside from the acid, but took the brunt of the monster's claws across his chest. Zahariel cried out as its claws seemed to pass through his armour to slice the meat and muscle of his chest. The pain was intense and cold, and he gasped at the suddenness of it. In the instant of contact, he recalled the soul-numbing chill he had felt in the forests of Endriago just before he had encountered the Watchers in the Dark. This beast was just as unnatural as whatever the Watchers had been set to guard, and he knew with utter clarity that they were not simply another form of Xenos creature, but something infinitely more dangerous. Zahariel dropped his bolter and drew the sword fashioned from the Lion of Endriago's tooth. The monster came at him again. He swept his sword through the creature's slashing limb and stepped in to cut upwards into its chest, the keen blade slicing the insubstantial meat of its body like a sopping cloud. For all their speed and ferocity, the ghost-like monsters could not hope to stand against the relentless stoicism of the Dark Angels, who closed the noose of their warrior circles and slaughtered them without mercy. Zahariel watched the lion fight his way through the monsters as though possessed with a killing fury beyond imagining. His sword clove through the creatures, turning half a dozen to wet piles of jelly-like fluid with every blow. Nemiel fought alongside the lion, his skill nowhere near the sublime majesty of the Primarch, yet no less determined. His cousin was a fine warrior, and beside the lion he looked every inch the hero he was. Within moments of the battle starting, it was over, and the last of the creatures were dispatched. Where before the mining settlement had rung to the sounds of bolters and screaming chainswords, silence now fell as the Dark Angels regrouped.
"Secure the site," said the lion as the last of the monsters was destroyed. "I want that Stormbird, with Brother Librarian Israfael's weapon on the ground in 2 minutes."
"Where are we going next?" asked Chapter Master Hadariel.
The lion pointed to the yawning chasm of a mineshaft that plunged steeply into the flanks of the cliffs.
"Underground," said the lion. "The enemy is beneath us."
Rhianna Sorrel had been afraid on many occasions, but the fear that had gripped her since her abduction from the streets of Shalul was like nothing she'd ever known before. When the soporific effect of the flowers had worn off, she had found herself bound and blindfolded as she was taken to some unknown destination, carried in a conveyance of some comfort into the searing hot deserts around the city. Their destination had been a mystery, for her captors said nothing on their journey, but had fed and watered her over her protests. Wherever they were taking her, and for whatever purpose, they clearly wanted her alive and healthy when they got there. Her only method of telling the passage of time was that the heat of the day had diminished and that the night was cool and silent. She could hear footfalls around the vehicle she travelled in and the creak of its wheels, but the only sounds beyond that were the soft cries of the wind over the grainy sand. Despite herself, she had slept, and upon awakening had been carried from her conveyance by a number of people. She wept as she feared the touch of the creatures she had seen wearing the masks during the Festival of Lights, but her bearers appeared to be human, inasmuch as they sweated and grunted like humans as they bore her onwards. Her blindfold had slipped, and she had caught sight of prefabricated metal structures, like those used to house workers in mining or agricultural settlements. Strange sounds surrounded her, odd shuffling movements that sounded like footsteps but which had an odd off-kilter rhythm that made her think of the strange creatures once more. Her journey had continued underground, the cool, musty air of a cavernous passage unmistakable. A strange metallic taste hovered in the air, and an electric tension crackled in her hair and from the jewellery she still wore. The metallic reek grew more powerful, the stink of it filling her nostrils, and she gagged on the cloth in her mouth. She had kept her eyes screwed tightly shut as her captors carried her deeper and deeper into the earth, terrified of what she might see if she attempted to discover where they were. Then followed a series of transfers, as she had been handed reverently from one set of arms to another, until she had been laid against an upright slab of what felt like smooth stone. She stood with her back to the slab of stone, the sound of a slow and terrible heartbeat booming in the air, as though she were trapped in the ribcage of some enormous beast. Her hands were untied, though they had been secured to the stone slab by some metallic clamps fixed with sliding bolts. Hands gently cradled her face, and she shuddered at the touch. She felt her blindfold being removed and blinked in the sudden light. Before her she saw a man in a crimson robe, with a mask of gold, expressionless and unknowable, on his face.
"Toussaint?"
she asked, more in hope than in any expectation of being right.
"Yes,"
said the masked man.
"It is me you speak with."
Even in this nightmarish situation, it made her want to cry to hear a familiar voice.
"Please," she cried. "What are you doing? Let me go, please."
"No, that cannot be," said Toussaint. "You are to become the Melakim, a vessel for the Ancient Ones who dwell behind the veil. You will bring us victory against the Unclean Ones."
"What are you talking about? This doesn't make any sense."
"Not to you,"
agreed Toussaint.
"You are godless people, and this is a godly act."
Your god? Said Rihanna. Please let me go. I promise I won't say anything.
You lie with your words, said Dusan, neutrally. It is the way with your people.
No, shouted Rihanna. I promise.
It makes no difference now. Most of your people are dead, and the rest must soon follow when you host the Melakim. As I said, there will be pain. For that, I am sorry.
What are you going to do to me?
Though she could not see his face, Rihanna had the distinct impression that Dusan was smiling behind the immobile surface of his mask.
We are going to defile you,
he said, pointing upwards.
Your impure flesh will be home to one of our angels.
She followed his gaze and wept tears of blood as she saw the angel of the Saroshi.